Oh, right. Well, time just flew by. Welcome to the second half. I'll get started right away. Hopefully, those who I can't see your faces, you are here, and that you won't miss anything. Again, my name is Susan Alatrico. I'm here to really share what I thought was really curious about the Satipatthana Sutta is that there are specific instructions that are repeated through all the foundations. And I said to Anna, maybe we can do something a little different because I'd like to kind of explore and explain, why they're repeated or just explain what these, they're called refrains, what these refrains are. And first, I kind of just wanted to start with mindfulness. It's all over our society and selling services and experiences. And, all you have to do is Google mindful and then a noun and mindful doggy daycare, mindful snacks, and a mindful target practice, believe it or not. And so we know as practitioners, it's not about being efficient and being effective. There's a quality that mindfulness demands of us in the Dharma and practicing the Dharma. And it's not just it's more about paying attention to an experience, knowing what's happening when something is happening with an open heart. There are qualities, wholesome qualities, ethics and intentions that we bring to this. And that's really the only way our heart opens is if we are gentle and spacious. Heather Martin has even spoken about it as the qualities of mindfulness are of a deep, caring nature, even sacred. And I like Bhikkhu Analyo, who I'll quote quite a bit tonight, and that is, he says mindfulness is like coming back to the presence of a good friend. Once mindfulness is established, she is your best friend. She's soft, receptive, and alert, as Anna said earlier, to what's taking place. And so it's not, we're not commenting, judging, liking. We're just knowing the experience as it is, not detached, but intimate. And so mindfulness and awareness are used by many as the same quality, the same thing. So the image of a lack of mindfulness in some of the Buddhist scriptures are of a walking corpse. And here's what the Buddha said about mindfulness. When mindfulness is muddled, we have an infatuated mind and we remain tightly holding to it. I love that term. Mindfulness can be muddled. And so what we do is, he said, regarding things seen, heard, sensed, and cognized by you, in the seen, there will be merely the seen. In the heard, there will be merely the heard. In the sensed, there will be merely the sensed, and the cognized, there will be merely the cognized. And so these examples that I'm going to give, I'm going to use the body as an example, but he went on to say, when firmly mindful, one sees a form, and while one undergoes a feeling, one is not inflamed by lust for forms. One experiences it with a dispassionate mind and does not remain holding it tightly. That's not to say you can't take a bite of something and enjoy it, have a pleasant feeling. For one dismantling suffering, thus Nibbana is said to be close by. So just kind of wanted to lay that out there for mindfulness. But the refrain is what I was really wanting to share with you. You know, these repeated phrases that the Buddha offered after each of these instructions. And Bhikkhu Anālaya put it this way. If you want to take anything away tonight, keep calmly knowing change without clinging. Just without attaching to anything. And Joseph Goldstein says to keep exploring a situation at hand, internally or externally, clearly knowing its impermanent nature, in that we remain free from desires and discontent and dwell independently without clinging to anything. And I'll explain internally and externally a little later. So what I was saying before, I'm going to use the body in these examples since I can't give all the examples from Vedana and the mind. I'll do my best. So the first refrain that we hear is diligently contemplate the body is body, internally, externally, or both internally or externally. So we do this with all of the four foundations. And so I thought about this and I read a little bit about what does that mean internally and externally. And well, we can feel what that means when we contemplate internally, thinking about how our body is feeling. But there's another sense about this where I think it points to a unity that we don't do this practice alone. There is an external mirror that we experience and that we are in this together to alleviate the suffering of all people. And also just like we know there are other people in the room. We see them. We, you know, we know when people are upset. We have conversation with people just on that really coarse level. Watching others' mindfulness can help us be mindful. I have a brief example when I was on a hiking trip many years ago with Anna. We took a break, and I said, "Oh, I'll just say my back. My back is killing me," and she said, "Killing, that's a powerful word," something like that. And it's the first time I reflected on my language. Like, wow, why, that is a strong. So I became aware of my language through that external communication. But there's something else, and Anna was pointing to it about the elements. There's also that internal, external reality on the most subtlest levels. Everything is elemental phenomenon passing or arising and passing away. So when we look at nature and thus reflect on ourselves, and this leads us to the next refrain that clearly knowing the arising and passing away of all experience. That's repeated in all the foundations. I hope you like this. Anālaya likens mindfulness to the dough. And clearly knowing is the yeast. Clearly knowing, wisdom, know that you're knowing that you're knowing. And this allows us to see the true nature of our experiences and, you know, with insight. So we're piercing that moment and not just taking, you know, the body for the body. We're looking behind the mind, you know, like looking at my language, looking at my actions. And that there's another way of looking at feelings or even mind states that, like weather, watching them arise and pass away and change like the weather. So this characteristic is impermanence or anicca, that all phenomenon is arising and passing away. So the other refrain is, there are a couple more. Being mindful just for the sake of knowing and mindfulness, because mindfulness is the gatekeeper to what Heather Martin likes to say, the children of the mind. the children of the mind produces offspring, and she calls them the children of the mind. I think it's wonderful. They're products. It could be greed, delusion, doubt, restlessness. The mind's constantly producing these things, and we can notice, or we can keep them at the door and say, "Ah, I see you doubt. I see you lust. You know, oh, just stay where you are." And so it's in the case of the body. Yes, we want to say there is the body, but we also want to ask, what is the body? So we want to say, yes, there is a body. There are feelings. There is mind. But what is it? And when we look at it, we see that there is no, for instance, with the body, there's no mind there. There's no person there. If you laid out your bones and skin and flesh in front of you in a pile, there's no you. And so we're actually getting underneath the body. We're getting underneath, so to speak, like the mind, and to know its true nature. Remaining free from desires and discontent so as to dwell independent, not clinging to anything. So we can observe ourselves. We can observe ourselves liking something. We can observe ourselves having a pleasant experience. But we can also observe ourselves when we're like running toward something that we're really craving without thinking. You know, that ice cream or a job that we just can't get out of our mind and we want it so badly, or our views and opinions that we're clinging to and without really thinking about it. And so, you know, we can be angry. To give an example of feeling angry or anxious in the body, we can pause and feel all these feelings in the body. And notice that energy rippling through. I had this experience, and after I'd noticed all my feelings in the body, I didn't even have to respond. It was like it took care of itself. So when we start to get in touch with how to use these foundations toward peace and within greater understanding, we don't have to act on a lot of our impulses. And so what Anna was talking about too, bringing that kindness and curiosity to our attention, to the forefront. It's not just, we can't push the mind to see something for the sake of seeing something. You know, we have to develop this encouragement, openness, allowing that, you know, all things are welcome. So we feel safe to want to explore. Rodney Smith talked about how we, you know, the first steps in the acronym is ROAR. We relax, we observe, and we allow, just to get curious. What is this that's happening? I'm feeling angry, you know, and just to feel into it a little bit. And one of the great ways to do this is the skill of noting what's happening. And so we can note anything and not judge it. I'm angry, feeling sad, just noting whatever is happening. By the basis of just seeing it, it changes. And we can see the nature of it arising and passing away. I wanted to show you an image of a wheel that Analio has used in his book. Let's see, screen share. There we go. At the top is, well, around the wheel, dwelling independently without clinging to anything. And this is from, I have to show you the reference of this from Satipatthana Meditation, a practice guide by Bhikkhu Anālayo. So dwelling independently without clinging to anything. And notice that mindfulness of the body is the hub, because that's the wonderful thing about this practice. And that is, all of the Dharma is revealed within our own body. We carry around, you know, our spiritual tools right here in our own body. So everything that we're asked to be grounded in the body, and to allow this mindfulness and these capacities to see the true nature of all phenomenon. And so if you look at this, then you can see the anatomical parts are there. Then we start to question, what is this body really? It's not me, mine, or myself. And the elements allow for a more subtle exploration of the nature of earth, wind, fire, water, what all life is made up of. And then mortality, questioning that, yes, old age, sickness, and death is coming. And thus clinging lightly to life, taking it less personal. And so feelings are accessed from the body. And we can ask ourselves, since we feel our thinking as well, you know, what is the body telling us? You know, lie detectors, I was reminded, lie detectors work because the body doesn't lie. You're trying to lie up here, but the body is telling the truth. That's why we listen to the body. And then the hindrances and the awakening factors are there representing the Dhamma, or the overall curriculum, as Lindell said at our day of mindfulness, of what's moving us toward awakening, or what's moving us away from awakening. And so let me just stop that for a second. So the key to all of this is being rooted in the body. Don't leave the body. I mean, Ajahn Chah, I think it was, who said, never let the mind leave the body. That's why I love the foundations of mindfulness. The Buddha said, this is the path for purification in these four foundations. And, It is my practice. I'm always coming back to the body now. And I didn't used to. I was one of those people who couldn't even find my breath when I was meditating. I shouldn't say one of those people, because that's not a kind thing to say to myself. I understand that. But I couldn't locate the breath. It just kept boom. I wouldn't allow it. Then I felt safe. It takes what it takes. So this is a practice of not rushing, but intention, and giving yourself the time that you need. So I wanted to end with a poem. It's called Abhaya's Mother. It's from the First Free Women. This body you carry around is like a small child, always wanting something. Over the years, body and mind have gotten a little tangled up. When one is hungry, the other eats. When one is sad, the other cries. Look closely. Can you see that narrow valley where one ends and the other begins? Thank you.